Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to episode 23 of The Vanished. This episode is part two of my coverage of Ireland's Vanishing Triangle. If you have not listened to part one, pause this now and go and listen to that first. In part one, I went over the missing women, and in this episode, I will discuss the suspects. If you haven't looked already, I have pictures and a map up on thevanishedpodcast.com. When I was looking into suspects, I found several unsolved murders of women in the same area or close to it. I wondered if they, too, could be connected to some of the women who are still missing. Since 75% of listeners are from the U.S., for comparison, Ireland is about the size of the state of Indiana and has a comparable population. So it becomes concerning when you see all these missing and murdered women from a certain area of a fairly small country. Before I head into the suspects, I want to go over some of these unsolved murders. In 1982, 21-year-old Patricia Furlong was last seen at Johnny Fox's pub. That should sound familiar to you, because that is where Annie McCarrick was last seen 11 years later in 1993. Patricia was found in a nearby field the next day. She had been raped and strangled with her own clothing. A man was convicted of her murder, but his conviction was overturned. Is it a coincidence that two women went missing from the same bar? One was found murdered, and the other was never seen again. In 1987, 27-year-old Antoinette Smith had gone to a David Bowie concert and was last seen in Dublin around 2:30 a.m. She was found the following year on Glen Dew Mountain in Enniskerry. She had also been raped and strangled. Enniskerry is where Annie McCarrick had gone to walk the day that she disappeared. In 1989, 19-year-old Deirdre Mulcahy was found raped and strangled in Middleton. You can see on the map that she was a bit further away from the others. 29-year-old Patricia Doherty was last seen when she left her home in Tallaght to do some Christmas shopping in 1991. 6 months later, a man out cutting turf found Patricia's body buried in bogland at Glassamucky Breaks near Featherbed Mountain. Patricia was still wearing her long coat, and the keys to her house were found in the bog soil. She was found very close to where Antoinette was found in 1998. Is it possible that there was a serial killer working at this time who got better at hiding bodies after the 80s and early 90s? So, moving on to suspects, out of the eight women who are considered to be part of the Vanishing Triangle, I would like to separate the ones that the families and authorities believe were most likely killed by someone close to them. That would be Fiona Pender, Fiona Sinnott, and Kira Breen. The main suspect in Fiona's case was her partner at the time. Remember that Fiona was 7 months pregnant. I was looking at statistics from the United States, and murder is the leading cause of death for pregnant women. Studies have shown that homicide was the cause of death for 20% of women who died while pregnant, compared to 6% of deaths of non-pregnant women of reproductive age. This is a quote from the Journal of the American Medical Association. The killings span racial and ethnic groups. Many women were slain at home, in bedrooms, living rooms, kitchens, usually by men they knew, husbands, boyfriends, lovers. Did Fiona's partner have second thoughts about their relationship? Remember that he was later charged in Canada for drugging, raping, and videotaping his wife. He also supposedly threatened to kill her. He was cleared of those charges, but there were videotapes showing these events. If it is true that he was drugging his wife in the years after Fiona disappeared, could he have tried something similar with Fiona and gave her too much of a drug? Fiona Sinnott also has a strong suspect who does not appear to be related to other disappearances. Remember, she had been in an abusive relationship previously, and the authorities have focused on this person. One thing that makes her disappearance stand out compared to the others is that her home was cleared of her belongings, in what is thought to be an attempt to make it look like she took off. If her disappearance was a random abduction, wouldn't it be really risky for a perpetrator to go back to her home and spend all that time cleaning it out? One thing that I personally thought was odd was when her ex-boyfriend who stayed the night said that she was still having pains the next morning and that she was going to hitchhike to her doctor, but then he left and got into his mother's car. Why didn't he offer her a ride? The third one that also seems unrelated is Kira Breen. It is believed that she snuck out to meet an older man. He is the main suspect in her case. One possibility that I thought of was, what if she never made it to that meeting because someone abducted her on the way? They could have offered her a ride or just snatched her off of the street. One would think that if the main suspect had nothing to do with this, that they would be more open about the situation and admit that they had plans to meet her that night. Although, if that were the case, he may not want to bring more suspicion on himself by admitting to having a relationship with her. He was in his 30s at the time, and Kira was only 17. That leaves us with Annie McCarrick, Ava Brennan, Imelda Keenan, JoJo Dollard, and Deirdre Jacob. Here are some of the suspects. In 2001, Larry Murphy was convicted of kidnapping, repeatedly raping, and attempting to murder a young woman. He snatched her and put her in the trunk of his car, then drove to a location where he brutally raped her and beat her. He then put her back in the trunk and drove her to another location where he did the same thing. When she fought back, he placed a plastic bag over her head in an attempt to suffocate her. Two hunters happened upon the scene and recognized Larry. He fled, and the hunters took the woman to a police station. He was eventually sentenced to 15 years, but only served 10. His release caused a huge uproar because he refused treatment while incarcerated and never showed any sign of remorse. He was asked about the injuries that the victim sustained and commented, "Well, she's alive, isn't she? She was lucky." In 2001, a Sex Offenders Act was passed in Ireland, but Larry was sentenced before, so he has not been supervised after his release.
Gardaí last night, they issued a press release. It's about 7 pages long, which is unusual for the Garda press office to have such a long press release. And it basically relates to the management of convicted sex offenders. It specifically states that it's not specific to Larry Murphy. But of course, the reason they've issued this is because so many media queries have been called into the Garda press office over the last few days because of the controversy surrounding Larry Murphy's release. There's been an awful lot of debate around this whole area of remission, which is the release early for good behaviour of Larry Murphy. And a lot of people, a lot of groups saying that unless a prisoner takes part in rehabilitation in the prison while they're serving their sentence, that they should not get out early. A lot of concern as well about where is Larry Murphy going to go and the management of all that, and how is he going to be monitored. Of course, he's from Ballinglass in County Wicklow, so there has been some concern locally in that area that Larry Murphy would go back to County Wicklow. But I'll just read you a short extract from this press release that we have. Now, we know that in the United States that you can go on a website and you can see pictures of convicted sex offenders, and you can have details of where they are and all that type of thing. It's very different here. And it says, Gardaí are not at liberty to disclose details relating to names, addresses, convictions, etc. of convicted sex offenders unless under certain circumstances, maybe passing that information on to other agencies like the HSE. But it gives the reason, and it says the reason is because such disclosure may increase the risk of reoffending due to the stress caused to the offender, make the management of that risk more difficult, and may cause unnecessary concern to the public. So it's kind of interesting to read through the Garda press release, Siobhan.
Larry is considered a suspect in Annie, Deirdre, and JoJo's disappearances. In Deirdre's case, a piece of paper was found amongst Deirdre's grandmother's possessions that had Larry's name and phone number written on it. Remember, Deirdre had gone to visit her grandmother the day that she disappeared. Larry was an expert carpenter and made wooden toys. It is thought that he may have been trying to sell them in the grandmother's shop. Larry was very familiar with the area where Deirdre lived and disappeared. He had worked at stables just a half mile from her home and visited Newbridge again in the weeks before she vanished. He was there to view a potential carpentry job at a local pub. Another prisoner claimed that Larry admitted to killing Deirdre. Her family wants to shift the focus away from Larry because they are not convinced that he was involved. They do not want people to just assume it was him and write off other possibilities. Many people believe that he is a strong suspect in Annie McCarrick and JoJo's disappearances as well. I did find that one of JoJo's sisters has publicly stated that she does not believe that he is responsible for her death. Authorities do not believe that the attack that Larry went to prison for was his first offense. His comment that the victim was lucky is chilling. Does that imply that perhaps others weren't so lucky? It could be coincidental, but women stopped disappearing once he went to prison. There are other explanations for that, though. The perpetrator could have died, moved, or gone to prison for a different offense.
Murphy is also a prime suspect in the disappearance of three women who went missing in the Leinster area in the 1990s. Annie McCarrick, Jojo Dullard, and Deirdre Jacob. Earlier this year, Midweek paid a visit, along with Sunday World journalist Niamh O'Connor, to the spot where Murphy carried out the brutal rape.
So you can see how remote it is.
It's eerie even standing here now in the middle of the afternoon, but what must it have been like on that night, do you think?
Well, you can imagine the terror, the fear. The girl thought she was going to die. She was subjected to one of the most horrific assaults that has ever come before the course.
And his house is directly as the crow flies through the trees we can see in front of us. How far over that way?
About 2.5 miles. It's directly that way. He quickly became prime suspect because this area is absolutely on the border of where three of Ireland's missing women vanished. So he quickly became prime suspect in those cases.
And he remains prime suspect in three of those cases?
Absolutely, yeah. He was jailed prior to the sex offenders law coming into place, so he won't be subject to the same rigours, although there is a clause in the law which allows for limited retrospection. The guards have said that they'll put a 16-man sort of a squad on surveillance on him. So
will that happen, do you think?
You know the state of our resources. The victim herself wrote to the minister appealing for him to reconsider. Larry Murphy's planning to come back to the same area and where he struck and strikes fear into the heart of women. But the minister said that his hands are tied, that there's nothing he can do, that Larry Murphy is entitled to 25% good behaviour, which begs the question, what constitutes good behaviour? He's shown no remorse for what he's done. And our system has become so weighted in favour of the accused and prisoners that the victim's rights are just falling somewhere between justice and the law.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished.
Another suspect is Robert Howard. He is also known as Wolfman, or as he called himself, the Wolf Hill Werewolf. In 2003, he was convicted of the 2001 rape and murder of 14-year-old Hannah Williams. This crime took place in the UK, but he had been living in Ireland previously. Robert Howard has a history of sex offenses dating back to 1965. One thing that I found interesting about him as a potential suspect is that from his known crimes, he had quite a range as far as ages go for victims. All the girls included in the triangle were in their late teens and 20s, except for Ava Brennan. Robert was convicted of the attempted rape of a 6-year-old in 1965. Shockingly, he only got a 9-day sentence for that. In 1969, he broke into the home of a young married woman in an attempt to rape her. She ran naked and screaming from the house. He grabbed her by the throat before neighbors managed to drag him away. He was sentenced to 6 years in jail, but served only 3. During his time in prison, he assaulted a female member of the staff. In 1973, he broke into a 58-year-old woman's home, raped her, stole her money and keys, and took off with her car. He received a 10-year sentence, but only served 7. In 1991, he kidnapped a 22-year-old woman and held her hostage for 3 weeks. The woman was repeatedly raped and abused. In 1993, he held a 16-year-old girl captive for 3 days. He brutally raped her while tightening a rope around her neck if she tried to stop him. He told her to shut up, that he was going to do what he was doing, whether she was dead or alive. On the third day, she was able to escape out a second-story window and run to a police station. He was given a suspended sentence for this brutal crime.
Now, on August the 13th, 1994, 15-year-old Arlene Arkinson left her home in Castledurg in County Tyrone to make the short journey across the border to Bundoran in Donegal. She was going to a disco. She was never seen again. Last weekend, the only suspect in the case, 71-year-old Robert Howard, died in prison in England, where he had been serving a life sentence for the rape and murder of 14-year-old Hannah Williams in London in 2001. RTE journalist Barry Cummins has written the books Missing and Unsolved, and he's been following this case.
Well, what we do know, Audrey, is that Arlene Arkinson travelled to Bundoran that night in August 1994. She was one of three teenagers to get a lift with Robert Howard, another girl and a boy. They all travelled from Castledurg over to Bundoran. Howard was a man, much older than these teenagers. What they did not know was that he was, by that stage, a convicted rapist, a predatory attacker, who had moved from the Republic of Ireland up to the north and was living in Castledurg. He brought them over to this disco, offered them a lift, which they accepted, and then brought them back that evening. He dropped off the other two people, and then he always maintained he had dropped Arlene home. He didn't. We don't know what happened to Arlene, but that we do know Robert Howard was the last person known to have been with Arlene, and to this day, that has been the question. What happened once she was alone in the car with Mr. Howard?
And he did stand trial for her murder.
He did, and this was back in 2005, and he was found not guilty. The evidence was placed before the jury. They took their time to reach a verdict of not guilty. They didn't know the full story of Robert Howard. They didn't know that he had committed crimes against children and against women in England, in Ireland, in Northern Ireland. And so he came to them without any of that background. They didn't know that in 2001 he had murdered a 14-year-old girl in London, Hannah Williams, whose body was found a year after she went missing. They had none of that detail. They didn't know how he had strangled that young girl to death. They didn't know the detail of how he had attacked a woman in Cork in the 1970s. He had served 10 years in jail in Mountjoy for rape. They knew none of that. He was simply the last person known to have been with Arlene. And they then reached this not guilty verdict, which in turn has led to where we are today, that the family of Arlene Arkinson wanted Robert Howard to give evidence at an inquest. It would have been the only other legal recourse available to them, that he would have been forced to go to that inquest to give evidence, to face some type of questioning. Because back at the trial, this murder trial, he never gave evidence. The prosecution outlined its case, its limited case, because they didn't go into the detail of his background. So he never actually had to give an account. And that was the whole idea with this inquest, that he would have been forced into a position to give an account of what had happened that night. And the hope was always that he might crack, he might finally say what he had done and where Arlene's body may lie.
Had he admitted giving her a lift?
Yes, he had. It was known that he was the last person to have been with Arlene. And this is the whole thing, looking at Robert Howard's history of offending. It started in the 1950s, right up to the late 60s. He tried to abduct a six-year-old girl in the north of England. In the 1970s, he was in prison because he had been caught for raping a woman in Cork. And he had, but back then, just to try and get an idea about who's Robert Howard, who's now deceased, he was a man who in the early 70s was using an alias when he was living down in County Cork. He was a cunning criminal, described as a psychopathic predator. But there's this detail about Robert Howard that maybe nobody can actually fully understand, but he was a person who abused borders. He travelled from the Republic over to the north, over to Glasgow, down to London. He lived everywhere from Ranelagh, Clondalkin, Monaghan, Wexford, Mayo, Castledurg, Newry. So he was everywhere. He was always on the move because one of the things about this is that police forces were aware of him. They knew about his offending. They would make him aware that they knew of him. He would then just move on. So So it was a constant chasing him around these islands. And back then in 1994, he was the only suspect in Arlene's disappearance. And they investigated him. And then 7 years later, he finds himself in a position in London where he is able to murder a 14-year-old girl, despite all these police forces knowing his history, knowing his ability to cause harm to children and to adults.
Where do the police, where do Arlene's family believe her body is?
I think there's only two possibilities here, either side of the border, basically, either in County Tyrone, close to Castle Derg. There have been many searches around forested areas of West Tyrone, or just over the border in Donegal. There have been searches the Gardaí have undertaken previously around the Pettigo area of Donegal.
I can't find anything to specifically link him to the women from the Vanishing Triangle, but he is obviously capable of committing such crimes. He passed away in prison in 2015. A third suspect is John Creerar. He was convicted of the 1973 murder of 23-year-old Phyllis Murphy. He was not caught until 1999, when his DNA was matched to the evidence from her body. Detectives do not believe that he committed this one murder and then stopped for 26 years. So he was around when the women went missing and went to prison in 1999, which is around the time that the disappearances stopped. Philip Colgan abducted and murdered 25-year-old Layla Brennan in March of 1998. He had strangled her to death with her own bra. Michael Bambrick was also an active predator in the early 1990s. He was convicted of manslaughter of two women, 42-year-old Patricia McGauley and 36-year-old Mary Cummins. He buried them in the back garden of a house in southwest Dublin. Army Private Sean Courtney murdered 31-year-old Patricia O'Toole in September 1991. She had stopped his car to ask for directions, and he offered to give her a ride to a friend's house. I wanted to touch on the IRA suspect in Annie McCarrick's case. Though I am not from Ireland, and I could be totally off base here, but this comes across as more of a conspiracy theory to me than anything else. But we know, anything is possible. I would like to discuss the idea that these disappearances are the work of a serial killer. The victims did have similarities, like they all had brown hair, most vanished in broad daylight, they were very similar in ages. Also, no trace of them has ever been found. If we want to tie in the women who were murdered in the years before the disappearances, maybe a killer got better at disposing of bodies. We all know that it is hard to prosecute a murder without a body. My personal belief about a possible serial killer is that the same person could be responsible for a number of these disappearances, and the rest could have other explanations. I hope that with the recent push for more information in many of these cases, that some closure is brought to the families. If you have any information about these cases, you can call 1-800-666-111. At the end of this episode, instead of playing my regular music, I'm going to play some music from A March for the Missing that was done for Fiona Pender. I found the music to be very moving. It actually makes me cry every time I listen to it. That brings us to the end of episode 23. Thanks everyone for listening. If you would like to email me, my email is thevanishedpodcast@gmail.com. I am on Twitter @thevanishedpod. There is a Facebook page called The Vanished Podcast and a closed discussion group called The Vanished Podcast Discussion Group. It is closed to keep your comments private, but everyone is welcome to join. There is also now a call-in line for the show. It is 814-VANISH-9. If you like the show, please rate and review on iTunes. That helps other people find the show, which gets more people talking about these cold cases. I will be back next week with another episode from the States. I hope everybody has a great weekend.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.